I am Jack Rothrock. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a former guest. It's a pleasure to be here. And what I'm doing, I'm welcoming you on behalf of the staff. That's my purpose. And it is great to have you all here tonight. And what I'd like to do, it's dark out there, I know, but I would like the staff at this time to stand up. They've worked the day, most of them, and they're here tonight because they want to be here, not because they have to. Would the staff please stand up? Dr. Reed, you didn't stand up.
There you go.
Thank you. That's my few words. We do want to do anything we can to make your stay here comfortable and to help you wherever we can. So the staff is at your disposal. If you need us, let us know. This time, I'd like to introduce our Vice President of the Board of Directors, Homer Nash.
Thank you, Jack. I am Homer Nash, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've got just a few words. On behalf of our president, who's out of town at this time, and all of the board of directors, we would like to welcome you to this spring conference and to invite you to come out to the picnic at the hall tomorrow afternoon, visit inside the hall, walk the trail, and have a very enjoyable time while you're here. We feel that it's going to be a very good program, and we hope that all of you will leave and carry something home with you to help you stay sober and like it. Thank you. And let me introduce the president of the council, Bill Maney. I almost forgot that.
I too am alcoholic. My name is Bill Maney.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, everybody. Pleasure to be here tonight, and a pleasure to see so many of you here, too. I'm just going to take a second also. On behalf of the council, we're glad that you're here. And if there's anything that any of us with the badges on, gold or blue, can do to make the conference more enjoyable to you, let us know. But I came here for a treat and a treatment. And I'm going to turn it over to Jimmy Rogers so we can get on with the evening's affair.
My name is Jim Rogers, and I, too, am an alcoholic. You know, this afternoon, I met another friend. He's always been a friend, but I just got a chance to meet him this afternoon. And I think, you know, believe me, we're in for a special treat tonight. And in keeping with short talks, at this time, help me give a warm fellowship hall welcome to Hillary D. from Cullman, Alabama.
My name is Hillary Draper, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Good evening. And I'm not here for a few words. Let me thank the committee, or whoever is responsible for inviting me. There was a time when people didn't want me anyways, and it's so nice to be wanted. My gracious. So many, many thanks to anybody and everybody who saw to it that I came. I have not heard Mary Jo, so I'm looking forward to hearing her. I haven't heard Hazel, and I haven't heard Bill Crawford, and I haven't heard the surprise speakers. Now, that leaves one person I haven't mentioned on the program. And the reason I haven't mentioned him is because it reminds me of an introduction that I got many years ago when I was to give the keynote speech to the Diocesan Council of Catholic Women, and they were meeting in convention in Mobile, Alabama. About 1,000 women, you know the type, all built like ice cream cones and dripping diamonds and mink, you know, the church women of America. And Madam President had given me a glowing introduction. And when she got through, she ended up with these words. Now, some of us have heard Father Hilary before, and some of us have not. And those of us who have not are looking forward to hearing him now. Be that as it may, I'm still looking forward to hearing C.D. Collins again. So I'm delighted to be here. I'm also tickled to death that I get to talk on Friday. So often they put me on Sunday morning, saying they wanted the spiritual program then. You know, I always thought that every meeting that we had was a spiritual meeting, and I still believe that. But the reason I like Fridays is I get to do what I'm supposed to do, and then I can sit back and enjoy the whole program. So, I got a letter here that says guidelines for conference speakers. It says, when eating in groups, don't we always eat in groups? Please ask for a separate check. When checking out of the motel, don't trust them. Look over your charges to see that they are correct. We know that the lack of profanity never offends anyone. Therefore, we request that profanity not be used at the podium. It says, submit your expenses for approval to our administrative director, and Ed Ward will pay if justified. And I still don't know what surprise speakers are, but I'm going to find out. By my watch, it is now 8:10. And I'm going to be done from down from here. If you want to know how much time you got to have, I'll be down from here by 9 o'clock. So let's go. I told you my name was Hilary Draper and I'm an alcoholic. I have heard one of my favorite speakers in these programs say, now that tells you who I am and what I am. And when the two of us got up this morning, the who said to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And that's the way it's been all day long. But it didn't used to be that way. It used to be that we got up, and the who said to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And the what said to the who said so. And the who would say, I said so. And the what would say, just you wait and see. And the what would get drunk, and the who would have the hangover. Isn't that a stupid joke? And then I've also heard so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, I was born at a very early age in a good Christian home, that I'm not sure that's anywhere as to raise children anymore. But at any rate, I was born at a very early age in a good Christian home in Mobile, Alabama. And we did not think it was seriously morally wrong to drink in moderation. We didn't. I cannot tell you when I had my first drink. It was always there. There's a Jewish dentist in Dallas who says they gave it to him when they circumcised him at 8 days. He may have beaten me by a few days, but it couldn't have been long. Now, make no mistake about it. We Catholics do think getting drunk is seriously, morally wrong. Just like the Baptists and some of the Methodists do. Couldn't resist that. That one was for Charlotte. If I had to give you the philosophy of drinking that I grew up with in my home, it was you drink as much as you want, as often as you want, whenever you want, but you do not get drunk. That's simple. And there are many people that I know right now in Mobile, Alabama, and all around the country who follow that philosophy of drinking and who don't get drunk. You know, I don't know what I'm doing an alcoholic. I can remember early on in my growing years, I had six aunts, an adopted one, and they had their own population explosion. I must have 60 first cousins running around. And whenever that tribe would come together for weddings or whatever, there was one uncle, call him Harry, who was kind of the leader of the pack. And when you were going to face that many relatives, you know, he'd always be having to take one more drink to steady his nerves. The only thing is he'd get so steady he couldn't move. And the other uncles would have to carry him home. But again, good education. My mother, I can still hear her saying the next day, "Now, you saw Uncle Harry last night. If you find that drinking does that to you, you just shouldn't drink. But you saw the rest of your aunts and uncles. They were perfect ladies and gentlemen. If it could be said of anybody that he had an education how to drink like a gentleman, it should have been me. What am I doing, an alcoholic? I don't know. You know?" And I had been in the program, dry at least, for about 2 years. And I once, this is true, at a closed meeting, asked my group, "Why am I an alcoholic? A wanted child, coming from a loving home, a God given to me by loving, caring parents, who was my father. I wasn't afraid of God. A splendid aristocratic background. I know today it was degenerate Southern aristocracy. A magnificent education. University degrees, an eminent divine, at least of the second Walter. What am I doing a drunk, an alcoholic?" Well, if you've been in AA a while, you recognize the silence that comes over a group. When everybody knows the answer and they're waiting to see who's going to zap the fool. You know. And there came the silence. And after the sufficient time for reflection, my sponsor, Juby, spoke up, and he says, "Oh, I can't use profanity, can I?" "Well, how am I going to quote Juby?" "Oh, Father Hillary, it don't make no difference how the jackass got into the ditch. Just get him out." Now, pay attention. Listen to that. That is magnificent wisdom. It doesn't make any difference how Hillary Draper got into the ditch of alcoholism. The important thing is that the higher power, working through this blessed program in connection with many people, not only just like you, but many of you people, have let Hillary Draper out of the drunk, out of the ditch of drunkenness today. And for this, I'll be everlastingly grateful. I'm supposed to stand up here and tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And we do that not as an ego trip, although God knows our egos are towering, and mine still is, and it needs to be put down time and time again. Because that's what we need, ego reduction in depth, if we're going to stay sober. But we're supposed to stand up and do this as a kind of witness, that maybe somebody out there who's listening and trying to figure out, you know, am I a little bit pregnant or not? Maybe something I'll say will make you catch your breath and think, "Oh, my goodness, I was like that." And this blessed program can work for that fat priest. Maybe it'll work for me. I never understood that for a long time. How could anybody out there identify with me, a celibate landlord, you know, a monk? But I got the answer to that. There was another priest, a blessed priest, who's gone to his eternal reward in this program with me, and dear, dear friend, Father Timothy, I can break his anonymity. The first lady we ever had who came into our group in Coleman, we didn't have ladies for a long time. This was a marvelous woman, and she's dead, but she got the program and was very, very active in it. Her father was a Baptist preacher. She came from a long line of Baptist preachers, and there she was, a drunk. And she had read in the paper that we were doing things in Coleman, and she called, and we didn't have any ladies to take the message, and two of our men went to carry the message to Hazel. And they told her we had a meeting, and that night she came to the meeting. Her hands shaking so bad she said she had to sit on them. And I didn't know this for 2 years, but she said when she hit the door of our group, the first thing she saw, it so happened, I don't always wear this Roman collar and this black suit to the meetings, but sometimes we do. And Father Timothy and I that night had on our full regimentals. And she said, as I came through the door, I caught sight of those two. And I said to myself, if the university or the church could do it, those two wouldn't be sitting here. And look at that. So I don't worry about it anymore, huh? You never know how you're carrying the message. A black suit and a Roman collar is carrying the message. Hooray. That's all I've got to say. What I was like, a towering ego, loaded with resentments. My father was dead when I was 4 years old. I know today I resented God for that. And a marvelous grandfather who was the male figure in my growing up years. A splendid mother, but it wasn't the same. All the rest of the kids had daddies. I didn't have one. I'll tell you exactly what I was like. After I had been in the monastery for a few years, one of the older monks walked up to me one day, and he says, Father Henry, said, you know, if you ever take a motto, I think your motto should read, Videre quam esse. Well, I knew that the classical motto read, Esse quam videre. And you translated that, to be rather than to seem to be. And here this joker was saying, your motto should read, to seem to be rather than to be. You know, always faking, always a hypocrite, always wanting to be something that I wasn't. Oh, Lord. And I think he was absolutely correct. And what happened is, as a direct result of drinking alcohol, I lost the two things that were most precious to me in life, namely my priesthood and St. Bernard, the monks of St. Bernard, the abbey of St. Bernard. And what has happened, what I'm trying to be like today, is I'm trying to reverse that motto. I'm trying, esse quam videre, I'm trying to be rather than to seem to be. St. Paul says in one of his letters, we are supposed to live soberly and justly in this world. Now, what I was like, I was hardly living. And I sure wasn't living soberly. And I sure wasn't living justly. And I sure wasn't in this world. So what I'm trying to do today, I'll add one thing to St. Paul. I am trying to live soberly and justly in this world one day at a time. If I could add something to St. Paul's message, that's what it'd be, one day at a time. Well, there it is. We can all go have ice cream. I've done what I'm supposed to do. If y'all want me to dot the I's and cross the T's, here we go. Alcoholism is a disease. It's progressive. It destroys the totality of the human person. It's a mental obsession tied up with a physical compulsion to drink. If you want to know what an alcoholic is, you give him one drink, nothing may happen. He may be a perfect gentleman, go home that night, say his prayers, go to bed, you don't go to work the next morning, but you can't guarantee it. You give him that first drink, and you may not see him for 3 more weeks. You cannot prophesy with any certainty what will happen if that person who is an alcoholic takes the first drink. That's a sign of alcoholism. That's a real sign of alcoholism. We have learned through bitter, bitter experience some of the signs that we're a little bit alcoholic, you know. And one of the signs is a blackout. You know what that is. You drink and drink and drink and drink and drink, and the body, in order to safeguard its own human life, short-circuits some of the systems. You go unconscious, you slide under the table, and there you stay until the next morning until somebody fishes you out. That is not blacking out, that's passing out. And I passed out too. But blacking out, drink, the body, and again, the same slide, short-circuit some of the systems, but this time we go into, quote, temporary amnesia, unquote. We continue to function, quote, normally, quote, but we don't remember it. No. And we're not telling lies. That's the absolute fact. That is our experience. I say that for the benefit of the Al-Anons, who, when you say to your drunk, where were you last night? He says, I don't know. And you say, blind. Tell me where you were. He may not have the foggiest clue where he was. And then you say to him, who were you with? He says, I don't know. You say, lying again. He may not. That's our experience. It's horrible. And here I am at 19 years old, joined a monastery, Christmas party, blackout. You don't join monasteries to become drunks. You join a monastery as a special kind of Christian witness. And here I am in the monastery at 19 years old, Coleman, Alabama, 1939-1940. Because my father was dead, my mother had sent me up there to the tender mercies of the monks, sold me up the river. And lo and behold, I had a glorious time. My classmates' families, all the women of Coleman at those times who knew how to squeeze the grape and make the German-type grape juice, they did it with Coleman County strawberries. And if y'all never tasted Coleman County strawberry wine before you got into AA, it's just too late. You'll have to wait to get to heaven. The most gorgeous color of red I have ever seen in a wine. An aroma, a bouquet, you could smell it in the next block when you took the cork out the bottle. A kick like the proverbial Missouri mule. But you were in somebody's home, a glass of homemade wine, a piece of cake, no trouble. And there I am in the monastery, you know what? The monks have got a wine cellar that won't quit. They've hid it from me. And they make a little homebrew on the side. Please, don't think there's 50 drunk monks at Coleman. There's not. There's me. The rest of them are pretty normal, natural people. They did not drink every day in those years. After Vespers on big feast days for an hour, Gemütlichkeit, come together. The homemade wine, the homebrew, pink lemonade for the panty waists, conversation. But looking back, it means more to me. I'm always the first one there, the last one to leave. I'm always thinking, when's the next time this is going to happen? Goody, goody gumdrop. The big book says we drink because we like the effects. And I love the effects. I love the taste. I love everything that went with it. It was company time, the way I saw it. I was the kind, I hope this doesn't bother you, that I would take a great big mouthful and then swallow it real slow and then suck my teeth. Many alcoholics said he couldn't stand the taste of alcohol. I loved it. And I love more of that than what it did for me. The effects, yes. I could just walk slightly atop the earth, you know? You know that feeling? You're not touching the ground, just going along. Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, dear God. And at 19 years old, a monk, young monk, first man, I go into a blackout. And that's bad, at a Christmas party, you know. And I don't realize I'm in a blackout till the next day. And then I try to figure out what's happened. How do I account for that phenomenon? What caused that? Was I losing my mind? I remember I worried about that. I never talked to anybody about it. I don't think I've ever told this before. I would not admit that I had a blackout until I was in the program 2 years. Imagine, I went through a treatment center, Hazelden. They must have been laughing at me. I never would tell them I had a blackout. I said, no, I never had blackout. I don't know why I hated to admit so bad I had blackouts. I don't know, but I wouldn't admit it. Who? But I had one right then, and I had many, many more. I think way back in the back of my mind, I knew it was the alcohol that had caused that. But I liked everything about alcohol at that time. And therefore, considering the matter with Aristotelian Thomistic philosophical principles, I came to the conclusion that what caused that phenomenon was the cheese. I don't know why you're laughing. It makes as much sense as some of the things you did. Isn't that wild, you see? We talk about alcohol being cunning, baffling, powerful. The alcoholic is cunning, baffling, and powerful. We're con men of the first order. And the people we fool the most, I think, is ourselves. Is ourselves. Everybody knows he's a drunk. His wife knows it. His kids know it. His relatives know it. His boss knows it. His dog knows it. I'm serious. Did you ever see a dog get around an alcoholic? He won't stay. Cats are too dumb. They won't get out the way. But a dog, he won't stay in the same house with you if you're drunk. But we're the last ones to admit that we've got that problem. And if you've got this blackout, that's almost a Satan sign that you got it. So there I'm, 19 years old. I really think I'm over the line. I'm an alcoholic at 19. But I don't know it, or at least I won't admit it. I like everything about alcohol. It's a progressive disease. That means it gets worse. Yeah, it does. In case you don't believe it, the AMA and the British Medical Association finally agreed it is a serious disease. Oh, Lord, we've known it for 50 years now, since Dr. Bob and Bill got into the picture. But merciful heavens, you know, it's a disease that progresses to one of three ends if you cross that invisible line between social and alcoholic drinking. Which reminds me, you know, I was a social drinker. Every time anybody said, I'm going to have a drink, I would say, so shall I. Isn't that pitiful? It's another one of those alcoholic jokes. But this disease progresses, number one, until we are dead drunk, in the literal meaning of those two words. Or until we end up in what is euphemistically called custodial care. In Alabama, that means they send you to Tuscaloosa, not to the university, and they lock you up, and there you stay until you're dead. Or you come to the third end, which is, I quit. But the horrible thing about the disease, at least as my experience is, and as so many of the other alcoholics is that when I got to the point that I knew I had to quit and I wanted to quit, and people had been saying to me, and I could say, I can quit anytime I want to. And they were saying, well, why don't you want to? You sure ought to. But when I got to that point, I discovered to my horror that I could not. That's alcoholism. I could not. I could not. I'm going to tell you two stories to qualify, then I'm going to get on. I was sent as a pastor to the mountains of Kentucky, where Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Kentucky come together, the Cumberland Gap area. I'll never forget that. I was angry, furious about being sent up there. But that doesn't really say anything. But the first morning I was there, the priest who's I was replacing said, after we had said Mass, we take your meals next door at Aunt Sally Coon's house. That's your house, but Uncle Albert and Aunt Sally, they live there. And I give it to them rent-free because when you want riding the circuits, they feed you. Uncle Albert belongs as a Catholic, and he's a retired miner. Aunt Sally belongs to the Lottie Moon Circle. So we go, hot September. There's Uncle Albert, a lovely man in his 60s. There I am. There's Timothy. Uncle Albert's son was a state trooper in his 30s. All he had on was a pair of shorts. His two sons, 18, 17. Well, conversation was difficult. Hot September. There was a great big water glass all beaded around like that sitting in front of me. I picked it up and took two great big swallows. You've seen the atomic bomb blasts. I could not breathe. I could not see. I couldn't hear. The hair on the back of my neck stood straight up. I'm convinced today that if I had not been an alcoholic, I would have screamed bloody murder. But I don't. I just hang on tight till the tremors pass. I'm not making this up. And when I can see again, Uncle Albert's got one, Timothy's got one, the troopers got one, the kids haven't got it. Well, when that breakfast was over, Timothy and I was dipping high over the weeds going back to the church. And I said to him, in the Lord's holy name, what was in that water glass? He said, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He says, anytime you can get it. You know, what a gorgeous place to send a budding alcoholic. You know, and I bloomed. My disease got worse and worse and worse. I was recalled to the college. I was dean. By this time, I'm hooked. I got to have it. I don't have to drink it every day, but it's got to be there. You see, my pattern, I told you, is I always drank as much as I could, as long as I could, whenever I could. The only two reasons that I ever stopped drinking from the time I was 19 years old until I got to this program was, number one, there wasn't anything left to drink, or I was too sick to drink it. Now, that's not normal drinking, but that was my pattern. I had to have it in the closet where I could look at it, shake it, look at the frog eyes, read the labels. But what? Well, in case of snake bite. Or maybe I wanted to celebrate Hungarian Freedom Fighters Day. You know, oh, Lord. I got a geographical cure removal, this time to the Delta of the Mississippi. If you all think that's in southwest Louisiana, you are mistaken. The Delta of the Mississippi begins in the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. And it goes down 40 miles on the Mississippi side and 20 miles on the Arkansas side till you come to Yazoo City. And if you all haven't lived in the Delta, you don't know what the South is about. Those people don't know the Civil War was lost. They don't even know it was fought and couldn't care less. The long, hot summers. God bless and save us. I always had so much trouble with the empty bottles. Every time I opened up the closet, it was full of empty bottles. And I would say, who's putting those in there? I couldn't drink that much whiskey. Notice, please, that is not normal drinking. A normal drinker finishes a whiskey bottle and throws it away. Not me, I had to save them. For what? I don't know for what. But here I was in Mississippi in the Delta, and I could pick up the telephone and say, Mamie. She'd say, be right there, Father. When I tell you that story, Father Malachy says, be sure they know Mamie is the bootlegger. Oh, you're sharp tonight. And Mamie would come, take the dead soldiers out, give them decent Christian burial, put in new recruits, and send you a bill at the end of the month. Had it made in the shade. Except, just like the big book says, I was coming apart at the seams. I was coming apart spiritually and mentally and emotionally. There was something wrong. I was supposed to be a preacher. I was supposed to be a clergyman, and I was getting drunk all the time, and people were beginning to talk ugly about me. You know, you can't hide it. You think nobody knows it. They all know it. Last story. I became, and believe this towering ego. I was offered the presidency of a college. With my track record, any sane man would have said, no, I cannot do that. What is the towering ego they are? Certainly I'll take that job. That'll show these people whether or not I'm an alcoholic. They wouldn't be offering that kind of job to a drunk. Those people in Mississippi gave me a glorious send-off. I know today they were saying, thank God he's gone. But again, because of this blessed program, I've been able to make amends. I can go back and hold up my head. Thank God. But I came home as president of the college. And everything that hadn't already happened to me happened as president of the college. It was just terrible. Everything. You know. Why do I have to tell you? All right, I'll just tell you one. Here's a good one. Where did you put the car? It's not your car. It belongs to the church. Where is the automobile? It cost $8,000. We want the car. Where is the car? I don't know where the car is. That's a good one, isn't it? Well, how about this? 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up. Now, wait, I've got on my black suit, my basic black. I got on a Roman collar. I wake up, and I think, where am I? 3 o'clock in the morning. I know instinctively it's 3 o'clock, because that's when I always woke up. It's a funny bed I'm on. It doesn't have any mattress on it. It's just springs, and there's no pillow. Where am I? I get an eye open, and there's bars at the window. And I thought, oh, Lord, you've played this time. No profanity, see? So glad to know y'all are clean drunk. You know, I crept out of that bed, and I got to that window, and I really built up a resentment because I could not figure out where I was. The way they built that jail, I couldn't tell if I was in Mobile, New Orleans, Montgomery, Birmingham, Nashville, Memphis, or Rome, Italy. I couldn't tell. And I don't know whether you all know in Carolina, maybe it's different, but if you're in Alabama and it's a small town, there's always somebody who has missed a Catholic church. And whenever things go wrong, the sheriff or the police or whoever calls up Mr. Catholic Church. And that night they called Mr. Catholic Church and told him that they had a priest in Mopoke and didn't he want to come down and get him. And Mr. Catholic Church says, leave him there till the morning. I'll be down in the morning, which was grand. But what I want to tell you is, at 6 o'clock they took me out down to the sergeant's desk. You know those. A lot of y'all know what I'm talking about. And here came Mr. Catholic Church. Now, I tell you, I'd just as soon seen the Pope. Guess who Mr. Catholic Church was? The chairman of the board of trustees of the college of which I was president. I'd rather seen the Pope, I'll tell you. But again, conned. That man was so good. He says, Father Hillary, don't you think we ought to do something about this? I said, it was the cheese, Frank. It was the cheese. That's all. And I got away with it. Finally, the end came a year later, 1967, December. The president was making a State of the Union message in front of all the important people of the college. The monks, 60 of them. The board of trustees. The lay board. The lay faculty, the Student Government Association, 200 or 300 of beautiful people. And I'm taking that speech. And the last thing I remember that day is the Lord is my witness. It's 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm taking one more drink to steady my nerves. And I went into a blackout and I don't remember a thing, even today, until the next morning at 6:30. And I made that speech. And when I tell you that, I can begin to sweat. And the shakes can come back. Because I can have some idea what it must have been like for those marvelous people to have to sit there and watch and listen to the obviously drunken Catholic priest, president of the college. That was my bottom. I didn't know it, but it was. The next morning when I come to myself, I've noticed the atmosphere is a little cool on the campus. I have figuratively slit my throat from ear to ear. Yeah. They've had a hurried meeting of the board of trustees, only one thing on the agenda, namely the president's resignation. And the sooner, the better. And in 3 days' time, when I go in throwing dust to the chancellor's office, he says, sit down, I want to say something to you. And he reads me the riot act in 6 or 7 gorgeous technicolor scenes. He tells me what a no-good drunk and bum I am. And, of course, I believe him. I don't know anything about alcoholism. He tells me that I've disgraced my own good name, my own family name, that I have dragged the name of the monastery down into ridicule, and that I'm a disgrace as far as the college is concerned. And he says they don't want me anymore. They've had enough of me. They're sick and tired of it. And he's just like that. Oh, it was awful. And he says, get away. I'm no longer in good standing in the priesthood. And I cannot stay at St. Bernard. And if you told me then that ever again I could try to teach a class at St. Bernard, I'd try honorably to fill a pulpit, to stand behind the altar, I told you, can't come. It's gone. Never come back. Let me show you the insanity of the program, of this disease. when he let me out of the office, I went right straight back down to my room and had another drink to steady my nerves. I've just lost everything that meant anything to me in life as a direct result of drinking, and I go right downstairs and have another nip at the tit of old Bitsy. If that isn't insanity, I don't know what it is. But that was it. The old man had said, I wish you would go somewheres and get some help with your drinking problem. He doesn't even know the word alcoholism. And I said, yes, I would. I don't know what let me say yes. I'm beginning to be more and more convinced that it was all the Al-Anon type people who loved me so desperately, who knew nothing to do for me except to pray for me. Because I'm convinced that if I hadn't said yes on that day, I'd be dead or insane. I could not have stood the burden of alcoholism. But I said yes. And the old man had heard of a place called Hazelden who had a reputation for doing good for people who are bad to drink. Now, there are what I call gold-plated souse traps that'll take you in, dry you out, introduce you to the pill, and turn you loose to run again. There are no such things as AA treatment centers. But there are treatment centers like Fellowship Hall that use this blessed program of Alcoholics Anonymous to teach us how to live a day at a time, soberly. And that was Hazelden. And my dry date is January the 14th, 1968. That's the day I got to Hazelden. And I didn't know what they did. I didn't know whether they stuffed something up in you, whether they blew through your ears, whether they turned your head around. I didn't know. I didn't know the word alcoholism. I get there. First morning I'm there, black suit, Roman collar. I go to see the counselor. That's not true. They take me to see the counselor. I'm dry. I'm scared to death. The first thing that man said to me, now this is the truth. Now, Father Hillary, that's the last time we're going to call you Father, because you ain't nothing but a drunk. You talk about profanity. They were blaspheming. I was so shocked. I started to call up the boss and say, you know where you sent me? But you see, they were trying to get my attention. They said, you have no right to wear that Roman collar. Take it off. Do you see what they were saying to me? There I was, that towering ego, hiding behind the collar, the hypocritical part. You are nothing but a drunk. Get that through your stupid head. That took a long time. I didn't like that. At that time, it was a 3 weeks program. And the second thing the man said to me was, don't plan on 3 weeks for this program. I said, of course not. I reckon I'll get it in two. Now, I'm not proud of that, but that's exactly what I said. Oh, he says, no, no, no. He said, we find for doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, undertakers, pharmacists, professors, lawyers, ministers, it takes 3 and 4 times as long to get this simple program. I see some of you have heard that line before. And I said, why? And they said, because it takes so long to get behind there and find out where the real Hillary Draper lives. And they were right. They were right. Oh, mercy, they were right. That's gone to months and years. In Hazelden, in 3 weeks, they expected you to work or do something about the first 5 steps of our blessed program. The first thing they did was to give me the big book. That's not true. They sold it to me. And they said, read it. The first thing I did was to look inside to see if there was a cross and an imprimatur from a Catholic bishop to say it was approved reading. And, of course, you know there's no cross, no Catholic bishop's name in it. So I said, ha! It's most likely foot-washing Baptist literature printed in Nashville, and I'll be damned if I'm going to read it. They're just trying to brainwash me. Isn't that stupid? I wouldn't read it. No! Now, let me show you how intelligent that was. At the same time, they sold me the little 24-hour-a-day book. You know that one? It doesn't have any cross in it, imprimatur. I loved it. I read it every day. You see the logic? No, there's no logic. Well, that's the way it was. But it finally became apparent to my cunning alcoholic brain that the people who were getting out of Hazelden were taking, doing, working steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it further became apparent to me that if I didn't take step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I was going to be in Hazelden until Gabriel blew his horn. And I didn't want to stay that long. So one night I sat up all night and read 164 pages. Couldn't wait for breakfast to get over. Shot down to the counselor's office. I said, I got step 1. My life is unmanageable. I'm powerless over alcohol. He says, you ain't got nothing. Get back.
Imagine talking to me like that. I said, I have got step 1. My life is unmanageable. I'm powerless over alcohol. He said, you have got nothing. You are loaded with resentment. I said, I don't resent anybody. Because I believed it, you see. But he was right. I resented God. I resented the Pope. I resented the bishop. I resented the abbot. I resented all the monks. I resented all the kids in the school. He was right. Absolutely correct. Oh, Lord, I want to tell you what really happened. How did something happen there? There was a brother, a religious brother, who I knew. You know, you were all 120 people there on one thing, alcoholism, drunkenness. Well, this young man, he would have nothing to do with us. One Sunday afternoon, he was knocking at my door, and he came through. He wasn't 5 feet tall. He says, Father, the counselors have told me to come in and talk to you. No, come in. He said, this is my second time around. I was here 8 weeks, went home, got drunk the next day, and the next day they threw me back in. And he said, my opinion of myself is so low that I can go through a door closed. And the counselors have said, if they can't get me up, the program will never work. And they told me that the counselors have also said about you, if they can't get you down, the program's never going to work. Well, they hadn't told me that. So I said, they said, what? He said, you're supposed to get me up and I'm supposed to get you down. I said, did they tell you how? He says, no. Well, I thought, if that isn't the stupidest thing I ever heard. But he looked so woebegone. I said, well, come in and sit down. I said, what's your name? He says, Brother Joel. He's dead and gone too. He said, what's your name? I said, Father Henry. And what kind of brother are you? He said, I'm a Christian brother. They teach colleges and schools. Like Memphis, they got one. He said, what are you? I said, I'm a Benedictine monk. I said, where you come from? He says, Winona, Minnesota. Where you? I'm from Alabama. Call them a little bitty town. I said, what y'all got down there in Winona? He said, we got a college. He said, what y'all got down in Alabama? I said, we got a college. I said, what were you in the college? He said, I was the president. He said to me, what were you in the college? I was the president. And that creature had 2 PhDs and a student body 3 times as big as mine. And you see, I thought I was the most important drunk that ever came down the pipe. And all of a sudden, there was an identification. There was somebody just like me who was just as sick as I was. And we began to get better. And I'm happy to tell you that he got sober and I got sober. He never became president of the college again, but he went back home and he was elected every 2 years the head of the brothers. He appointed the president. He lived to celebrate his golden jubilee as a brother, and he invited me to go up to Winona and preach for the occasion. And y'all haven't seen me when I'm dressed up. I got a top hat and a gold walking stick, and I got a train, and I got lace and red ribbons like you never saw. I'm a very important Catholic. When I walk, the earth shakes. And I took everything I had.
Some people, we have the expression in the South that the preacher fills the pulpit. And some people said I overflowed that one. But I wasn't about, and there must have been 500 or 600 brothers there. They all knew the story. They knew where Brother Joel came from. They knew where I came from. A couple of bishops, another, you know, important people. And it was a great day, and I can never forget. We were sitting at the table, all these important people, and Brother Joel was sitting next to me, and the bishops, and the bishop said, how is it that Brother Joel knows the abbot of Alabama well enough to have him come all the way up to preach for this occasion? And I looked at Joel, and Joel looked at me, and I said, Bishop, ain't neither one of us going to tell you. Isn't that grand? Well, that business of identification, that business they tell you, find a winner and hang on to him. Find a winner in your group and hang on to him. Man, I hung on to Brother Joel, and he hung on to me. And finally, I got home. I didn't find AA right away. I left, as I told you, January the 14th. I actually got back to Cullman on September the 1st. I had to stop by a halfway house. I was so slow at learning. I wish I could tell you, in September I got into the program. Everything happened. It didn't. I couldn't find it. They weren't in the phone book. I said, they're not there. The priest that I knew real well used to say, well, why don't you go up to Decatur? Surely they've got them up there. That's only 30 miles. I said, well, I don't need it. Notice how much I've learned. I said, I read the big book. I share my experience, thinking that with people I've seen doing some good. A classical two-stepper, only I didn't have anything to give. Uh-oh. There goes the water. Anyhow, along in December, this priest who loved me very much, non-alcoholic, came to me with a phone number. He said, for your information, AA is alive and well in Cullman. Call this number. Every day, 3 days, he said, you're causing you an answer. Well, now, he finally learned that you have to ask the alcoholic the right questions. And he said to me, when did you call? I said, midnight. Again, I'm not proud of that. He said, call now. I called. I got my sponsor, Juby. And the first thing I said is, Mr. G, my name's Father Hillary. I'm out at the college. I'm an alcoholic. I need to go to an AA meeting. About like that. And there was this great silence on the telephone. And I found out what realists, AA people, are. The first thing Juby ever said to me over the telephone was, Father, are you drunk now? Which, of course, was the crucial issue. I said, no, of course not. He said, well, it so happens we have a meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. I'll be along at 7:30 and pick you up and take you. Notice he doesn't tell me where the meeting is. He doesn't tell me to get there. He says, I'll be there at 7:30 to get you. I said, well, fine, Mr. G. But don't come to the front of the college. I'll meet you down on the road to the cemetery in the dark of the moon under the pine trees. Again, I'm not proud of that. But that's the way it was, the towering ego. It's a wonder that man didn't say to me, hey, Father Hillary, when you want what we've got and willing to go to any lengths to get it, call me back. But no. 7:30. There he is. You come on to come and I'll show you the road to the cemetery, the pine trees, the dark of the moon, where Juby came to pick his monk up. Take me to my first AA meeting. Oh, Lord. We went up the steps. I wish I could tell you it was glory, hallelujah. It wasn't. It was horrible. It was horrible. They had a little old room about as big as that corner over there. The plaster was coming down off the ceiling. The wallpaper was rolling off the walls. One naked light bulb, a hole in the floor where they swept down the dirt. Old nasty sofa with the springs coming out. About 12 people, and they all looked like Church of Christ, the foot washing Baptist to me. Now, I'm not proud of that, but that's the way it was. It's not that way today. I thought, oh, if I can just get out of here, I've made a mistake. A good sponsor knows when to get out of the way, and Juby had vanished, and I wasn't about to walk 2 miles home. I'm looking through the glass door and seeing in there, and while I'm looking, this lady comes out. Dressed to the nines. I knew her as a splendid Catholic matron from up in Decatur. I didn't know she was an alcoholic. She walked through that door, and she says, hello, Father Hillary. You're right where you want to be. Come on in. You'll be okay. We're glad to have you.
And she put her arm through mine, and she mesmerized me right through that door. Now, it was 2 years before they thought I was well enough to realize that that was a put-up job, that that woman was a shill. You know what a shill is? The dancing girls outside to get you to pay your money to come inside? Yeah. After I called Juby, he called that lady. He says, "Rosemary, come to the meeting in Coleman tonight." She says, "I can't. I'm chairing my own meeting up here." He says, "I don't care what you're doing. Come down to Coleman. I got a Catholic priest coming in here. I know a thing about Catholics, much less priests. You're a Catholic. You get down here and help me with him." And when the poor, drunken Catholic priest is trying to get through the doors of AA, there's Rosemary, holding out the hand of the brother. I shudder to think what would have happened with me, with my tower and ego, with my pride, if Rosemary hadn't been there that night. She literally mesmerized me right through the door. And I've been there ever since. Rosemary's still in the program. She's still in the case. I'll walk a long way for Rosemary. That was the beginning. That was the beginning, and I've got exactly 3 minutes to finish up. Here we go. Hold on tight. So many good things have happened to me, I cannot begin to tell you where. I just cannot begin to tell you. They told me that my first birthday would be my happiest. In a way, it was. But I'm here to say to you that each succeeding birthday that I have experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous has been better than the one that went before. I'll tell you just two stories and then shut up. All the promises of page 83, 84, all the rest of the promises, to some extent, are coming true in my life. And I agree with what they say there. They will always materialize if we work conscientiously for them. But quickly, let me tell you this one. 1972, I've been dry sober 4 years. The abbot of the monastery retired, and the monks come together to elect a new boss. And they get together, they lock the doors, they start praying. It's a very simple process. The rookies are not allowed to vote. Only the full-fledged 33rd degree members are allowed to vote. And it's secret ballot, and you just vote, and everybody, of course, is dying to know who's the abbot. And they ring all the bells when they affect an election, but they can't leave the hall. They have to sign too many papers. But they send out word who was elected. And that August in 1972, when they came to ask who was elected the new abbot, the answer went out, Father Hilary was elected. And the young monks were running all through the monastery that day, shouting all the way with AA. And that's what this gold chain and this ring are all about. It's the office and the church. It's a long way from drunkenness to the bishop's throne. A long way. Many people say you couldn't get there. Let me tell you one other thing. It's a long way from a drunk tank to the pulpit of St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, the most important Catholic pulpit in the United States of America. But last November, because one of our monks was named a bishop, I filled that pulpit. It was dead and dead. When I knew that I was to do it, I called up every alcoholic I knew on the East Coast and said, "Get in St. Patrick's, because I sure will need you that day." My sponsor says, you put the cork in the bottle, and you practice these principles in all your affairs a day at a time, and there isn't anywhere you can't get. Thank you.
Father Hilary, on behalf of Fellowship Hall, we'd like to present to you this small gift and appreciation for this magnificent talk this afternoon.
Isn't that nice? Can I open it up?
Okay.
It's wrapped so nice, I hate to take these of the wrappings off. But like a drunk, you know, too much is just enough. Oh, let me see.
Wait a minute. Wait.
Did you ever get enough of anything? The poor lady who wrapped up the room and airing the things up, but you have to be patient. There must be an easier way to do it. All right, here we go. Thal Heinlein. Who is Thal Heinlein? You know what it is, but Spring Conference 1985, Father Hilary Draper Fellowship Hall. Isn't that glorious? I put it on my desk, and every time I see it, I'll say, God bless everybody here.
Thank you, Father Hilary, for a most inspiring message.